Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June the 27th, 1996. In the fireside room this evening, we're going to be listening in on a Holden forum entitled, How Our Hearts Are Changed, Embracing the Lesbian and Gay People in Our Lives. Let's listen in.
Chris Sharon, and I serve as an assistant to the teaching staff coordinator, Deanne Lagerquist. And in that capacity, I'm acting as facilitator tonight. In Holden tradition, we'll start out hearing from each of our panel members and then open it up to a group discussion of the issues. I'll ask each of them to introduce themselves and then to speak for a few minutes, each of them, about their experiences. And when each of them has done that, then we'll proceed to a larger group discussion. I want to encourage people, if they disagree with something, to go ahead and say that, because our discussion will be richer if we don't all agree. But I ask that people would be kind in the way that they express their feelings, and that we would show love above all to one another in the midst of our disagreements. And lastly, I value everyone's participation, so I may overlook some people in order to involve people who have not spoken yet as the discussion goes on. So just a warning in advance. A brief introduction to the topic. We were talking about what theme or what approach we wanted to take to the forum this week. And in part, what we're doing this week is we're remembering the Stonewall riots in New York and the whole explosion or the whole evolution in our society that led forth, the challenge that those people in that place gave to the rest of the country to begin to rethink their opinions about gay and lesbian people. And as we talked, the issue of pride came up. What does it mean for a Christian community to gather around gay and lesbian people with pride? And one of the readings that Tim, our fire chief, was sharing with us from Chris Glazer's daily meditations picked up that issue and talked about whether pride is a good thing or a bad thing. Many people know that in Christian tradition, pride has been seen as a vice and as a sin. And so we wanted to open with just a brief reading from June 25th, earlier this week, that raises that question and kind of sets the tone for why we're proud and why we want to frame our discussion, how our hearts have changed, embracing the gay and lesbian people in our lives and talking about our journeys in doing that. So he writes, as the Jews celebrate Passover in remembrance of their deliverance from Egypt, so we celebrate Gay and Lesbian Pride Month, week, and day, as a remembrance of our deliverance from spiritual and societal bondage. A straight minister invited to deliver a sermon at a gay pride worship service approached me for advice. I've always been taught that pride was a sin, he said, perplexed. I explained, I believe shame, not pride, is more of an issue for people today. False pride or hubris may itself be an expression of deeply felt shame, the need to puff oneself up because of low self-esteem. Current theories link shame to many of our personal and social ills. Then I told him that one cannot apply a concept of sin, of pride, to a marginalized people like us who have always been taught that we should be ashamed of ourselves. Isaac Dinison wrote in her book, Out of Africa, pride is faith in the idea that God had when God made us. Lesbian and gay pride simply expresses faith in the idea that God had when God made us. So, in the light of that meditation, we're inviting all of us gathered here tonight to participate in the discussion about how we've come to be proud and what a journey might mean for us if we were to consider going to that place. So I'd like to start down at this end and just move one by one, having each of us introduce ourselves and then share.
I think I will start, because as David and I talked about how we are a couple and have three children, I think my part will be better coming first. My name is Karen Herseth. David and I live in Northfield, Minnesota. He is on the faculty of the English department at St. Olaf College. I work as a secretary in the art department. And in my other life, I am a writer, especially about place, growing up in South Dakota. I would have, I think, according to some people's definitions, fairly redneck parents. I grew up driving a pickup with a gun over the back, and I could shoot it, for, drive faster and shoot it better than most of the sons of my father's friends. We have three children, daughter, son, daughter. Our oldest daughter is 34, our son is 30, and our youngest daughter is 26. And it is our youngest daughter who is lesbian. And we came to that knowledge in her first couple years of college, not too long after she did. And she's a person who of great honesty and integrity, and she could not live a lie very well. And so she came out at St. Olaf in her first year there, and she came out in the school newspaper. So David and I didn't have a lot of time to think about whether we were coming out or not. When I think about a changed heart, I guess I would like to refer to my own as an awakened one. The definition of a Buddha is to be one awakened, and I feel like I became a small Buddha in the life with my daughter, because I became awake to something that I should have known before. And if Allison were here, she would probably tell you that we had been a justice-concerned family in a lot of ways for a long time in our life, but there was great silence around the issue of homosexuality. Not negative things, but she heard nothing. And so in this awakening, one of the things we have determined to do is break the silence, both for our family and maybe for others.
And the point that I'd like to talk about briefly and hope that you can help us with is the response of family members to the church and how it feels to be parents of a child who is not fully embraced, either by the church at large or a local congregation. Our daughter Allison is the most spiritual of our three children. When she went to college,
you'd get a fight from the other two.
When she went to college, she started studying Greek because she wanted to go into the seminary. We think that she was probably going to be a minister. She talked about it a lot at that time. And we come from a family that has a long history of Lutheran ministers. But then she discovered in her first couple of years of college who she is, and she learned that her church, our church, would not ordain her if she were to want to become a minister and not make a promise of lifelong celibacy. So for us, one of the problems we have as parents is to watch our daughter's career plan sidetracked. She's been out of college for 5 years, and if things were different, by this time she might be serving a congregation as its pastor. But she can't do that in a fully honest way within our church. And then the other issue is the difficulty that parents have even within a congregation. We are in a congregation where we've been members for 30 years. This congregation all stood on our daughter's confirmation day and promised to support her in her spiritual journey. But when her spiritual journey has taken her through the difficulty of learning how to be a lesbian person and still be a Christian, the congregation has not embraced and supported her in that. We yearn to be in a congregation where we hear, as we do here at Holden, support of our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters and sons and daughters and aunts and uncles in the preaching of the gospel and in the prayers of the people. That does not happen at our congregation. And our pastor has told us that he knows that if our church were to vote on becoming reconciled in Christ congregation, that it would be defeated. And it's very difficult to be worshiping every day with, every Sunday with congregational members who have made it very clear in various contexts that they don't believe that our daughter is within the pale of what's appropriate to be for Christians. So the issue for us within the church that we want us all to think about is that it's not only the gay and lesbian and bisexual people, many of whom are alienated from Christianity or their church, but the family members as well. Well, we'd like your advice on how we can all work within our churches to embrace our gay and lesbian family members.
Could I just make a PS, though, a little bit to this? David is absolutely right in what he's saying about the church. I do have to say we've had a lot of support from friends and people who care about Allison. And she has come back to that church and given adult forums. And there are, you know, there are all the individuals that that do love her and do support her. So this is a kind of official posture that has a lot of power that we are speaking about here. It's not many of our individual friends, either there or on the college campus, where we have experienced support.
Thank you.
I'm Dorothy Satry from Rochester, Minnesota. My husband Roy is off in Vancouver finishing tomorrow a week class at Vancouver School of Theology. We have lived in Rochester for about 8.5 years, where Roy serves as assistant to Bishop Niklamo in the Southeastern Minnesota Synod office, and I also work there part-time. I can't help but think of the memories that come back to me sitting in this spot in the same row in 1989, which was 2 years after Sarah had come out to us as being lesbian. We have 4 children. And Sarah is our 3rd child. We have 2 boys and 2 girls, the boys on either end, the girls in the middle. And after graduating from Augustana College in Sioux Falls, Sarah told us that she had been struggling all through her college years and had come to understand herself as a lesbian person. As has been said, when a child comes out, it puts the parents in the closet, and I hid very well. Until 2 years later, when Sarah received her master's degree at the University of Oregon, Roy and I went out to celebrate that with her, and then brought her and her partner at that time here to Holden for a week. And I had made up my mind that I had hid and hadn't really even tried to face this, and by that time I was getting brave enough to decide, okay, and I know there's going to be resources here, I'm going to find out some more about this. And in the process of that week and listening to Dan's, some of the first presentations he made on tape, and reading and feeling the freedom or the support or the spirit, I guess, when we did a forum, One Family's Story, and so I came out in this room as a parent. I started it out by saying, the thought that came to me, even at that time, only 2 years later, was, you've come a long way, baby, you know, the advertising sign. And so when I was told that, or when we had decided that this would be our topic, how our hearts have changed, I had no idea what change was at that time. That was just the very beginning. And in trying to summarize and thinking, I think I'd like to just use some analogies. I think I have gone from ignorance to information in this time. That's what's made a change for me. I have gone from being unaware to understanding. And I've gone from fear to wonderful friends. And I think that summarizes what's taken place after taking that first brave step here and continuing to do that in those 3 areas to the point where Roy and I are members of the Parents PFLAG, Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. Through that, we do speaking in college classes and in other organizational groups. He and I have done forums, adult forums, in the congregations in our Southeastern Minnesota Synod. And I've been working for about the last 5 years with a group of people, and we have now organized a nonprofit organization, Gay and Lesbian Youth Services, in the Rochester and surrounding area, where we are working toward education, particularly for people who work with youth, and also a support group for the youth in and around Rochester, to have a safe place to come and talk to other people and know that there will be supportive adults with them. So that's how my heart has changed. There are many times when it aches, but many wonderful, the people that I have met through this whole experience has been just fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks. My name is Tim Hansen, and I'm currently the fire chief here at Holden Village, which I call my home. I've been here for a year and will be here for another year. I grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota, which is just north of Northfield. I don't know what it is about the area. Must be the water. I wish that there would have been a group like you were just referring to, you know, for me 20 years ago as I was starting to come out, because I was very alone and very isolated in Lakeville, which is a small farming community. I wanted to talk a little bit about the changing of my heart after coming out, or during my coming out process. It was probably the discovery that I had a heart. I had a very long, sort of adventurous and treacherous coming out process with very little support or information through my teenage years. And from the earliest ages, I knew that I was gay. I didn't really know what that was. But I got clear messages, as Dan has sort of mentioned, we get these messages somehow, that it wasn't an okay thing. And the feelings that I was having was not an acceptable or a very positive thing. I can remember sometime in probably 73 or 74, a flashing on the TV about a gay pride parade. And there were groups of men and women marching down this street together. And that was the first time that I ever really heard or saw something that I could connect with and think, well, there's other people like me. But the message that came from my family that was gathered around the TV that evening, you know, was very verbal in regards to, oh my God, look at that close. Just shut off the TV. I can't believe that. I should have mentioned I have two older sisters, two older brothers, and a younger brother. So we have a pretty large family. So early on, I began to want to get a little more information about what this was, and I did some of the textbook sort of things that we read about as gays and lesbians come out as youth, which was go to the library and check in the indexes of books under, you know, gay or lesbian, but I would never check out a book, never put my name on anything that somehow these police later on in my life would just come and investigate. I was sure someone would come and go after me. And through high school, you know, it was a small town sort of atmosphere with lots of gay jokes, and there was a young man, Jim, who was more effeminate, and later on I've learned that in fact he is gay, but during that time he was just picked out as the person in our high school who was gay, and he was often beat up. I got to the point in our junior year where he actually had to have a teacher go with him into the bathroom anytime he left the classroom because things had gotten so violent in our high school. And so I always knew that, you know, this wasn't a safe place for me to come out at all. This wasn't a safe place to be. At the same time, I had the same struggle within myself. I didn't want to be this person that I felt who I was. I not only pulled away from family and friends, but in a way I pulled away from myself. I even went through a period where I tried to develop another personality, another person that I named Tom. And anytime I had gay thoughts or gay feelings, I would say, that's Tom, it's not Tim. That's not who Tim is, that's not what Tim's about, that's Tom. And luckily after a while, it, you know,
occurred to me how insane that got to be. But that, just to demonstrate the isolation that I felt from myself, and not wanting to be who I was, and praying to God to please change me, and to try to do, you know, everything I could to try to be different from that. Some of those struggles included times of being very suicidal, being very alone and very afraid. I didn't feel like anybody knew me, because nobody really did in a way. I was very closed off from people. How I sort of dealt with the energy of all that is I became an overachiever in school. So I was very active and very involved in a lot of different things. My coming out process began, my closet door sort of swung open and closed several different times. But when I went to college, I began to gather a little more information and met some friends that were openly gay and could have some conversation about what that was about. So I began to get a little more information, but I couldn't reconcile it with being a Christian. I couldn't reconcile it with my spirituality. After my second year of college, I studied, went to school in England, and I got involved in a very charismatic group then and went through sort of the fundamentalist Christian being healed, having that evil demon cast out of me. And so I went deeply back into my closet and slammed the door. And with the support of this group that was probably pretty borderline cultish, I was, in a sense, healed from the sin of homosexuality, but what I felt was numb. I didn't feel any sense of sexuality, nor did I feel any sense of any feelings. I was happy for Jesus, and that was it. And that, you know, even if I had any thoughts or any feelings of wanting to deal with family issues or any feelings of sadness, it was because I wasn't reading the Bible enough. And I traveled for 5 months around Europe and traveled with my Bible, and there were times of if I saw someone, a guy that I was attracted to, I was convinced that was a demon, you know, that was sent after me to recapture my soul. And those would be times I'd have to just stop and kneel and use the Bible and pray and pray and pray and pray. So sort of another insane sort of period through my life. I came back from that and became a peer minister at the Lutheran Campus Center at Winona State University. Had hoped that I'd be, you know, circled around, you know, the Christian folks that I had found in England that would help me to be, you know, to remain cured. And the friends and the groups that I was there with, of course, weren't that way. And so the feelings came back to me, and it became time for me again to get to know myself. And there was one evening, it was very confusing, the feelings I was having after coming back to Winona. One evening where I can remember very vividly, I was on my knees next to my bed, and I was crying, and I was praying, and I was saying, God, I've prayed to be healed from this, and then I've gotten to a point where I sort of began to accept it, and then I, you know, wanted to be healed from this again, and back and forth, and I said, it seems like we can look at the Bible and use it to justify and to condemn and to use it in lots of different ways, and I just sort of threw it up, and I said, I don't understand this. I just don't get it. And I heard a very strong message from God that just said, you are my creation. You are who I've created you to be, and I love you just as you are. And that was a very enlightening evening for me, and I felt like a great weight was lifted from me, and that was the beginning of a more positive journey in regards to coming out. And with the help of a Lutheran pastor in Winona, began to deal with a lot of different things, you know, in my life, and began to look at who I was as a gay man in a very positive and open way. After graduating from Winona, I joined the Lutheran Volunteer Corps and went to Milwaukee, and that was the beginning of my coming out time. Moving to Milwaukee and beginning sort of that area of my life, I said, there's no more going back and explaining to somebody that I'm gay. I mean, from this point on, wherever I work, wherever I worship, my friends, whatever, I'm going to be openly gay, and if someone's got a problem with it, it's their problem, and we can work through that, and I can struggle with them. But I've held that true even in the church that, Cross Lutheran Church, that I became very involved in, but didn't, I sort of held back my membership until they became a Reconciled in Christ congregation, which they did, and that next Sunday I joined the church, and have felt that same way with positions that I've been in. If the organization I'm working with doesn't accept me as an openly gay man and doesn't have policy including non-discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, I want my God-given gifts and talents to be used elsewhere. that's the result of my coming to Holden. I wouldn't be here at Holden if Holden didn't have an inclusive statement in stating that they were open to gays and lesbians to come and be full and open members of the community and of the body of Christ here. So that's just a bit of my story.
Thank you. I'll just say my name is Dan Spencer, ditto.
So you were here a few years before me, but breaking the ground.
Oh boy, it sounds so familiar. It's, yeah. My name is Dan Spencer. I also have one of those notorious Northfield connections, but I went to the other Northfield school. I went to Carleton College, the original Northfield school. But have had a lot of wonderful early friends along the way. When I thought about this thing, how has our hearts or how has my heart changed on this? I think that issue that's been hardest for me, there have been a lot of joys and a lot of troubles along the way, but the hardest for me has been the internalized self-hatred, which we talk about sometimes as internalized homophobia. And Holden has been a real series of watermarks for me along those ways. I first came to Holden in 1979, the winter of 1979-1980, a couple years after a couple of suicide attempts in college where I was just at a point of desperation, and I rallied a bit from those times. But I came to Holden because I was feeling panicked. I was ready to enroll in a 7 or 8 year geology PhD program. I knew that this was going to occupy all my time, and I also knew that I hadn't dealt with my sexuality. And I'd been praying for 8 years, not like Tim, but it hadn't gone away. It would kind of ebb and flow. And so I thought, okay, I'll take a year. I've heard all about this Holden Village place, and maybe God will speak to me here. And Holden was the first time I had a conversation directly with someone and said the words, "I'm a homosexual." And I expected the thunderbolts and the wrath of God and everything else, and instead I got grace. John Schramm, who was the director at that point, responded to that and simply said, "Well, the brokenness isn't with you, Spence. The brokenness is with the way you're being treated." And that was really was revelation for me. So I went to seminary from here. I made my decision to put aside my geology programs to try some time in seminary. And a couple years later, I found myself meeting my first openly gay and lesbian people, which was probably the hardest step for me. I was terrified of meeting another homosexual person. And I remember one incident in particular, because of my first response was, "Well, I might be homosexual, but I'm not like those homosexuals." And I found I had a wonderful, wonderful, gentle MCC pastor living on my floor. MCC, Metropolitan Community Church, which is a denomination predominantly within and among gay and lesbian bisexual people. And she talked me into going to the regional MCC meeting, and I kind of screwed up my courage and got there and literally almost passed out when I walked into the door, because I walked in the room and there were 300 or 400 people there, and they looked like really nice people. And suddenly it hit me. I thought, "My God, I think they're all homosexuals." And then what was even worse was I said, "My God, they're going to think I'm a homosexual." And I mean, I literally almost passed out. And fortunately, this wonderful, gentle friend, Shelley, recognized what was going on and kind of walked me through the day and took me home and debriefed me.
So to speak,
yeah. And then a couple years later, I found myself back at Holden. I had come out by this time to family and other people, but I had never been in a community context where I was out of the closet. And I see lots of wonderful people in the room here from those times. Janet Grant in particular was a wonderful friend and companion. As I came out at Holden in the fall of 83, and as far as I know at the time, was the first time that I had dealt with that, and that Holden had really wrestled with what does it mean to have a member of our community be trying to be openly gay and openly Christian. And that was a real growing time for me. And the self-hatred was beginning to ebb away, but now I was really, I could acknowledge that I was gay, but I was still trying to sort of be like everyone else. And a few years later, went to my first gay pride parade, and that was very frightening, but I survived it. And it's been a constant process of just trying to let the self-hatred be replaced by the love I've experienced by other people and believe that I was worthy of it. The hardest thing, I think, for me being in the closet was I was surrounded by loving people, and I had convinced myself that I was utterly unlovable, as a result of this dichotomy. So I wore this shirt tonight because this is a little symbolic. Shows two cowboys embracing, and it says, "But Ma, he is the right girl." I bought this 2 years ago when we had an extended Spencer family reunion. And I just decided, well, when they're asking me all about who I'm married to and stuff, I'll just wear my shirt. And it was a wonderful experience, and I've gone from there. But I don't think my journey is over. I've come a long, long way. I'm now openly gay at the college where I teach. I serve as the faculty advisor to the gay and lesbian bisexual students. I do a lot of speaking in churches. But that self-hatred is so deeply ingrained, it just crops up in ways when I least expect it and puts real barriers. It's hard, to even express physical affection with another man in public. And it comes up in lots of ways as I try, and all those years of learning that I couldn't express intimacy to another man, and now I'm trying to unlearn that, but they're so deeply ingrained in my body that it's hard to get the body reactions out of that. So that's where my heart, I hope, is changing along with the rest of my body. But it's taken some time.
All right, thank you. Well, as you can see, we've got some rich experiences here. And I'm sure that there's other stories and rich experiences that you all have. So I invite you either to share your own stories and comments or to direct questions to one or more of the people on the panel. Who would like to start?
Is this rigged to be all Minnesotans?
What's that?
Is this rigged to be all Minnesotans?
I'm from Montana.
And I'm a Minnesotan who just happened to be born and raised in California, but I got Minnesota stock.
Yeah.
Now live in Iowa. Yeah, it's Northfield water.
And our daughter had spent most of her growing years between South Dakota and Iowa, and she didn't ever live in Rochester.
And I was stunned when I found out there were homosexuals at St. Olaf. You expect it from Carleton. St. Olaf, that's the college up on the hill where they're closer to God.
That's why they're there.
Please, yeah. In the back.
Dan and Tim, do you have supportive families, and how did they react when you came out to them?
I'll take that.
Did everyone hear the question? Okay.
Supportive family. Well, it I think I'm still in a process with my family. We're still on that journey together. I first came out to my mother my fourth year of college, did one of those five-year things. And it took me, she was the first family member that I came out to. My mother and I are quite close. But it took several dinners to do it. My plan was always to take her out for dinner. And then I'd be like, okay, before we start the meal, okay. As soon as dessert comes. We went through several desserts. Right. She gained a lot of weight in my country. But it was over a Chinese meal, finally, when I did it. And it was during the fortune cookies at the end. But she wasn't really surprised. She would say that... I had done a lot of signaling to my family. I tried to give out lots of cues, and I think many gay men and lesbians are very sensitive to picking up signals from people. You know, is this a safe person? Where is this person at? You drop little hints and that sort of thing. Well, I had given lots of hints to my family throughout the year, and my final big hint was my fourth year of college. I was in a play entitled As Is, by William Hoffman, and it's about a gay couple, one of them who has AIDS, and it's the struggle in their relationship. Well, I played Rich, which was the lover of the guy who had AIDS in the show. And in the midst of that show, I mean, there was lots of physical touching, and I kissed the other actor during that show, and I thought, my family doesn't see this, But and also just other conversations and things, you know, that we had had. So I had made sure that they all drove down from Lakeville. All my family lives within about 20 miles of each other. That they all had come down and seen this show, and went out to dinner afterwards. All grew this around food. Jesus always did that too. And had conversations about the show. So what'd you think, you know? And my father's comment I'll never forget was, "There wasn't very many women in that show." So, that when my mother and I did this dinner, and when I told her, I said, there's something that I need to share with you. Part of my drive and share with my family was that there had been too much distance created between my family and I wanted to bridge that gap and come back for them to share my life. And she said, well, I think I know what it is. And I said, well, good, then I don't have to say it. And she said, no, I think it's important for you to say it. And I said, okay. And I said, well, could you maybe guess what you think it is? And she said, well, are you getting married? And she sort of smirked, and I said, no, it's not that. And she said, well, does it have something to do with that show you were in? And I said, well, kind of. And she said, well, go ahead and tell me. And I said, well, I'm gay. And she says, that doesn't make any difference to me. She says, you're still my son, and I love you, and I will always love you. And she says, I don't understand it, and I have lots of questions. And we went through the typical line of questions, you know, but, you know, maybe you just haven't met the right girl yet, you know? And it's like, well, Mom? My response was, I said, well, you're right. And I said, maybe, and all my brothers and sisters were married at this point. And I said, and maybe Mark hasn't met the right man yet. And she said, no, don't be silly now. You're talking about something different. I said, no, I'm talking about the same thing. And she said, okay, oh, I'm trying to understand it. I said, okay. And she said, well, maybe this is just, you know, a part of your life, and maybe next year it'll be different. Yeah. One of those, it's that phase sort of thing. No, Ma, it's been this way a long time. It's always been this way. It will forever be this way. And her last one, which was quite painful for me, she said, but I thought you always wanted children, and how do you expect to have children if you're not going to, you know, marry a woman? And so I said, that's true. You know, it is one of my biggest dreams is to have children. And I said, maybe if that's in the plan for my life, that will yet unfold in some way. And so we've struggled through a lot of different things. That same weekend, I came out to my two sisters, who again were not surprised, and their response was, does it have something to do with that play you were in? So, very thankful for that production. My brothers were more difficult for me to come out to. I did that in the form of a letter on October 11th, 1988, which is National Coming Out Day. And one brother shared it with another brother who shared it with another brother. I wasn't expecting quite this full round of things, but that was the way it went. And unfortunately, we don't converse about it a whole lot. I've gotten pretty clear messages from them that is not an okay thing. And I try to be as involved in their life as I can with sort of these walls that are built up between us, unfortunately. My oldest brother and I have conversed about it a lot. My brother Butch has been involved in a number of different churches and can be very vocal about his opinions. And we've had several very long discussions, arguments that have lasted 4, 5, 6 hours. We've had a number of Bibles laid out in front of us discussing it from a Christian point of view. And his basic framework, probably even to this day, would be that, you know, he loves me as his brother and who I am, but he believes that I'm condemned to hell because of what I've chosen as a lifestyle. And we haven't been able to branch much through that. And in the past few years, the energy between he and I has only sort of heightened as his oldest son, my nephew Chuck, has come out. So that's charged the relationship a little bit. But giving him credit for one thing, he's probably the one family member that I talk most with about it. He's got lots of questions and he wants to learn, and we struggle back and forth, but we never arrive at the same spot as we converse. So I have a variety of relationships with my family, as most people probably do with their family. Closer connections with some and a little bit more distance with others. I haven't had an open conversation with my father about my being gay, but I haven't had an open conversation about much of anything with my father. He is a farmer and is quiet and doesn't speak much, and I'm sort of doing a stereotype thing there, but we don't. I know that he knows that I'm gay, and we sort of have these conversations, but we never talk about it directly. My mother's response when I told her I wanted to tell my father my parents are divorced was the killing thing is, he'll die. Don't tell him. And my brothers told me this, you're not ever going to tell Dad, are you? But I have brought in partners home with me. I think the most moving experience with my family has been when I was in a relationship with man Steve, and when my mother remarried, I brought, Steve and I had been together for about a year, I brought him home for the wedding. And my mother, she had this little Hawaiian wedding thing on a pontoon on the lake in Lakeville. But it was very picturesque. So each of my brothers and sisters' spouses, my mother had a Hawaiian lei for them to wear. And I waited as she went down the line because I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of embarrassing because she's not going to recognize Steve. And she did. She took the Hawaiian lei and she put it on Steve and she said, I want you to be right up there with everybody else. Uh-huh. And that was a very amazing, very message of acceptance. So.
Do you want to respond?
I'll respond pretty briefly. And then I would love to hear David and Karen and Dorothy's as well, because we closeting affects entire families, and how other relatives respond as well is part of it. But I'm fortunate to be in a pretty wonderful position with my family today, and it's taken a little time to get there, although good places stops along the way. 3 years ago, my parents marched with me in Washington, D.C. on the National Gay and Lesbian Bisexual March for Freedom, Liberation, Equality, or some such thing, when there were hundreds of thousands of us in Washington. And I had invited them to do that, and they came, and they were really, really surprised because they were treated like celebrities. They were afraid that they wouldn't be welcome, they shouldn't be there, that they were somehow trespassing on someone else's turf. I said, Mom, people will love you there. And a really funny thing happened, totally unplanned. I had bought them really cute matching Gay Pride March t-shirts. And they happened to be staying way out in Maryland, along at the farthest end of the metro line. So the morning of the Pride March, they drove early in the morning to the metro line, the farthest station out, in their matching Pride t-shirts. Ma and Pa gay parents. Got on the train. And with every successive stop, more and more gay and lesbian and bi people were getting on, and they would see them there, and they said, oh, can we take your picture? Oh, we're so happy you're here. They got so many hugs, they got their picture taken. You know, would you write my parents and tell them you're here? I mean, by the time I picked them up in downtown, see, they're basket cases. They'd been half the march, they'd been hugged by half of them, they'd had their picture taken by so many different people. And when we marched in the march together, it was like a 2-hour standing ovation. My dad cried for 3 hours through the whole thing. So that was a pretty wonderful moment. But it took a long time to get there. I'll maybe later relate another story about my mother's dinner party about that. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to say, that when I first came out, I had, like Tim, I had a variety of reactions, and I also have one of six kids. The one that was most touching to me was my youngest sister, Mandy, who had just started college in Santa Barbara. And I wrote a letter. I did the kind of chicken way out. I wrote a long letter to my parents, and then I wrote letters to all my other siblings because I was out of energy. And I said to them, I want you all to know that I just wrote Mom and Dad telling them that I'm gay, and I think they're going to need your support. Love, Dan. I sort of leave it up to them. And I've been told that for the next 10 days, the phone lines were... But I wrote an extra letter to my youngest sister, Mandy, because she just started college, and I said, Dear Mandy, we've always been really close, but I don't think you've ever had much experience with homosexual people, you know, at Upland High, and so if you've got any questions. And she wrote back, and she said, Dear Dan, you're right. I've never had much experience with homosexuals, so I started going to the gay and lesbian student group on campus here. I was panicked. I wrote her right back, and I said, Mandy, if you do that, people are going to think you're a lesbian. And talking about the internalized self-hate again. And Mandy wrote me back and she said, I don't care at all what people think about me. I want to know what life is like for my brother. This is how I can find out. So that was how Mandy and I began our walk together. And yet with each one of my siblings, it's been different. Some highs, some lows, mostly pretty wonderful. But it's pretty special when family does. And I'll say one last thing here. On a number of years with my parents, they always accepted me and loved me, but there were many years where we weren't able to talk about it. And then a number of years where we could talk about it fine, but they would never tell their friends. And so it meant whenever I would go home, I would be going into the closet out of respect for them. And that's where the whole dinner party thing came in, but that's another story. And this one...
We want to hear it.
You want to hear the dinner party? Okay, I'll do really quickly on the dinner party, but I wanted to say that I have a dinner party. I grew up Catholic, and so when you grew up Catholic, I mean, Lutherans think you have the cordon guilt, but Catholics, and my friends tell me Jews too, but we Catholics really have it. So you learn how to use it tactically. And I had been talking to my mom years and saying, you know, it really bothers me that you won't tell your friends or anybody that I'm gay. The message that I'm getting is that you're ashamed of me. Mm-hmm. Knowing that that was going to be very upsetting to her, and it was. We were sitting having a glass of wine together, and she started crying. She said, "You know, Dan, that I love you. You know I'm not ashamed of you. I'm so proud of you." And I said, "I know you. I know that. And you know that I know that. But when you won't tell anybody about me being gay, I'm still getting the message that you're ashamed of part of me." And so we talked about there, and she said, "The only reason I don't tell people I'm gay is because I'm trying to protect you. If I'm afraid if people know, that it'll make it." I said, "Mom, I live 2,000 miles from here. I don't come home anymore except to visit you. I have to go back in the closet." So we talked this all through. 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from my sister. She says, "Dan, have you been talking with Mom about gay stuff again?" And I said, "Well, not any more than normal. Why?" She said, "Well, I was home this weekend, and Mom was having a dinner party for all of her closest friends, and she asked me to come home and help her with it. And it went like a normal dinner party, and then we cleared the entree off, and she asked me to bring out the dessert. We passed all the dessert around, at which point Mother stood up and said, 'Now, I've invited you all here tonight just to tell you that Danny is gay.'" And then said, and that was the end of it. My mother doesn't do things halfway. And I wanted to tell Ingrid. Ingrid has been really helpful because she's helped me to start to write some of these stories down. That one soon will be one of those 12-minute writing exercises. But so my mother came out with a flourish, all her friends. But you know, the really wonderful thing, and I would love to hear some of the other parents' perspectives, because what happened with my mom, which she had not expected and I somewhat anticipated, was to begin to break her walls of isolation down. What she hadn't expected was within about 3 or 4 months, virtually every one of her closest friends for 40 years came to her and said, "Well, you know, my brother's gay. I have a niece who's a lesbian." Every single one, without exception, had a family member. These women had been closest friends for 40 years, but had never shared this with each other, and they lived in isolation with very painful parts of their lives from their closest friends. And so what I wanted to get to is, a couple years ago, I was having a conversation with my folks, and my mom said to me out of the blue, she said, "You know, Danny, I never thought I'd be able to get to this point, but we are so deeply grateful that you are gay, because you have taught us as a family that we can get through anything, that there is nothing that we can't get through because of the love we have, and you also have opened us up to so many things that we never would have been open to. We're much closer friends with our friends now. We've learned about other justice issues because of this one." So we had this wonderful conversation, and now my mom is, she's kind of moved to the side of being kind of the broadcast type, but it's been pretty wonderful. But you know, this was a 15-year journey as well, with lots of tears along the way.
Well, for our family, our favorite stories have to do with Allison telling her grandparents. And my mother is here, so Mom, you can correct me if I get this anything about this wrong, because we weren't there. But the problem for us was, once we found out about Allison, she needed to be able to tell her grandparents, and she wasn't ready yet. And this was creating for us a gap, because we weren't able to let Mom and Dad and Karen's mother know what we were really working through. We were urging her to hurry up and tell her grandparents, but she hesitated for quite a few months. Finally, she invited Mom and Dad down to Northfield to a meal, and took them to a choir concert, and then to the Ole store for a meal, and finally told them that she was lesbian. And as all the parties have told us, Mom and Dad just looked at her and said, "Have we behaved any differently toward you in the last 6 months?"
Yeah, we told her that we didn't know that. We told her we'd read it in the school paper. No difference, whatever. We got along just fine. And we love Allison, and we've been supporting her, haven't we? We've been out talking about the problems that gays and lesbians have. I've been in churches where my husband has been pastor and told them about it. And I think they were impressed.
The story about my mother, my mother died a year and a half ago. She was 86. Allison told her not too long within this time frame of needing to be open with her wider family. My family is all South Dakota, and so some holidays, instead of all of us driving the whole long distance, we meet in Brookings. And on a particular Easter, we met in Brookings, stayed at a motel, had an Easter morning breakfast, and went to church. And then a time afterwards where Allison just wanted to go for a walk with Grandma in the park and tell her about it. And I leaned over to my sister and said, oh, I hope this really goes well because Allison's going to tell Mom. And all of a sudden, my sister sort of drew back and said, now? And I said, yes. And she said, she's going to ruin our family holiday. And I was shocked because I'm really close to this sister, and I didn't expect that at all. In the meantime, Allison and my mother are walking through this park holding hands and talking, and this goes on quite a while. And mother was just, I mean, she was really fine. She was going to have to learn something new, and her process began that day. But this is a granddaughter that she loved a great deal, and she never missed a beat in how supportive she was for Allison after that. And as we drove back to Minnesota, I didn't want Allison to know how my brother and sister had responded. So we were sitting in the car trying to, you know, I was really pretty disgusted, and I didn't want Allison to know, so we weren't able to talk about it at that point. But the support from the grandparents, one of the things that we often say as we also talk at PFLAG kinds of gatherings and other things is if you can, as a gay person, risk telling your wider family, because grandparents who love grandchildren will be there about this. They may have their own educational process, and part of my story with my mother does have to do with the church, because she was brought up in Missouri Synod, lives in Pierre, South Dakota, and she wanted to talk to somebody about this, and she didn't have anyone to talk to. So one day she organized a bridge party. She's going to tell her bridge playing friends about this. And I had just had this book published. And before she could get going, I mean, she organized the party, she stood up to talk, and they shut her up like that. Said, we don't want to hear about this. And they didn't want to hear about David and me either. And from that time on, my mother was angry. And I had never seen her angry very much in my life. She's a very even-keeled person without high emotion any direction. But, you know, my disappointment in, she had one place, and I'm grateful for that place. Her assistant minister had a gay sister-in-law. Mm-hmm. So she would go and talk with him. But that was the only place in Pierre, South Dakota that she felt that she could speak. And there's a great sadness in me for this very devout person who lived her life in the church all her life to finally die without the support of her church on this issue. So that's enough of us.
I'm concerned if we want to field other questions. Sure. You know, I'll tell the story. There are so many similarities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the differences in time, barriers. The most difficult for our family, I think, was that our oldest daughter had children, and her oldest being a girl. And I think it was fear, you know, that blocked. And that barrier was very painful for me to watch. These two sisters not, you know, being able to communicate or talk because Sarah's older sister couldn't accept this. But time does wonders, you know, and it's gradually getting better. We happen to have kids scattered all over, you know, West Coast, Arizona, North Dakota, and Minneapolis, and we don't get enough time to be together, you know, to really have good conversations. And that slows down the process, but... Yeah.
Well, we have a little time left, and so I invite other stories or comments or questions. Sure.
I have a comment, and would appreciate your reflection on it. It kind of was brought up by Tim, and that is that this has been plaguing me for a while now, and that is that if there are certain congregations that can accept gays and lesbians and can ordain them, how can other people in the same congregation say that they will exclude them? I mean, you know, if good biblical scholars disagree on this, why can't, if you're going to err on the side of being loving like Christ would have? I don't understand how, if two people, you know, if people can really see this, and good biblical scholars from two different ways, why a congregation can be split on it. I mean, isn't that judging to decide that these people aren't allowed in the church? Why not allow them in and to get Christ's love? You must have thought of that.
Struggle with exactly the same question. And I don't
know. Do they think all those people are going to hell that are accepting the gays and lesbians?
No.
I mean, the people that don't, you know, that aren't affirming or whatever the word is?
I don't know if I've ever heard the extended judgment.
Well, I mean, if you go along with it.
I mean, members of Cross in Milwaukee, we'd lost, you know, several members after the Reconciling Christ, and they said that we had gotten away from the Word of God, that we weren't looking at the Word of God, that we were going with feelings and emotions and things too much, and that they needed to go to a place where they would be taught the truth and the Word of God.
I think many congregational members have been raised, as many of us were, without understanding the scriptures on this issue as we do, many of us do now. They have tried to be obedient to the scriptures and how they understood them, and to their pastors and to their wider church, and are just having a hard time understanding the issues. And many people, we didn't think about this much at all as a family until suddenly we had a daughter. And I think with many people, good Christian people simply haven't taken the time to study the issues as hard as others. And, you know, our hope is that many will come around to it. But all of those who are conservative on this, I think, are not mad or angry or solidly in that boat, but simply haven't thought it through and are confused and can't just change like that, just like many family members can't change like that.
Well, I wonder, David, if it's because they haven't had a connection with a person. I mean, everyone describes the connection with the person, and when they stop seeing it as an issue and start seeing it as people, the people in their midst, then it ceases to be abstract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Personal contact.
Thank you.
I wanted to just clarify one point that I made when Cross became reconciled, that I said that some members left. I think there's this fear that if a church decides to be open and accepting to gays and lesbians, that a bunch of people are going to leave. We had 7 members that left, and that was in 1989, and 5 of those 7 have returned back to the congregation. So just so that I'm presenting that the right way.
Was there a hand I saw earlier in the back?
I wanted to say amen to what you said, because you can accept the person, but if you think they're doing wrong, that's something else. And I think if you study the Bible and study the verses, you can interpret them a different way, but that makes all the difference in the world. You know, you've got to study them. That's how I say it.
Yes.
2 years ago, St. Francis from San Francisco had about 40 of their members here. And they are the church that got kicked out of the Lutheran church because they ordained 2 lesbian pastors. And they were wonderful, wonderful people to have up here to talk about it, because they had kids that were up here that were gay and could not go to church, that found a church 50 to 75 miles away and drove to it so that they could worship God. A couple I know from church went down to see them because it was his friend in high school, their pastor, they have a straight pastor, and two, and the church is some straight, some gay. I mean, it's a mixed church. And they just weeped at how many people are dying of AIDS in this church. And the church is so supportive of the Lutheran way of life, but are going to be a church that are going to be a beacon for what's happening here, I think.
I'm sort of sticking with the church come hell or high water, I think. But it's not without a lot of time of anger. And I have one of my dearest friends is a United Methodist pastor, and she is a pastor in Tulsa. She's heterosexual, married. She has chosen to do a special ministry in the AIDS and gay and lesbian community. They have existed as a mission church community for about 3 years. She has buried 31 of her own members. She's done over 180 funerals in Tulsa because she's the only clergy person that will do AIDS funerals. And as a result of this, she's being brought up on heresy charges. This has already happened. She was brought up on heresy charges, and fortunately they did not succeed. But it's hard sometimes to see. I mean, someone I care very deeply about just extending herself in that way and seeing the way the church responds, to not want to just sort of shake the dust off your sandals and move on. But on the other hand, the kind of witness to life that's happening within that new congregation is pretty powerful.
So this whole issue is up to the congregations. This has not come before the church body.
Oh, it has come before the church body.
It has.
It's coming, virtually every denomination right now is in some form of study process or struggle with it, I think.
But there's nothing that's been finalized or
approved. The UCC.
Are you talking specifically about this case of Dan's friend or in general?
No, church, the ELCA.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that paper that was being...
As far as I know, what's been done now is they've asked the group to write a consensus statement that only talks about the things that theoretically that we can agree on and doesn't make an official comment on the divisive issues, including homosexuality.
I know that in February, a letter came out of Higgins Row in Chicago that had some positiveness to it. I mean, it was a political letter.
Yeah.
But it basically called for congregations to be open to conversation with gays and lesbians and to try to create an atmosphere of conversation.
Yeah.
But that was about the line that it walked.
Yeah.
You know, saying that we're not a church about hate and about violence towards one another, and let's at least open up communication. So that was it. As far as a broad letter that supposedly went out to all congregations and all,
that letter was written and sent out by the Council of Bishops in the ELCA. Well, it's 9:30, and one of the things that happens at forums is that we get all excited about something but aren't able to finish it. So I hope that conversations will continue to happen and that stories will continue to be told, because as we've learned tonight, there's some wisdom and some wit in the stories that people tell around this issue, and I think that we've all benefited from the sharing that's taken place tonight. So if you wish to stay and talk longer, I invite you to, but I'd like to give people the permission to leave at the time that we decided. So let's thank our guests.